Hello, welcome to the Long Shot Leaders Podcast. I'm Michael Stein. My guest today is Wiley McGraw. Wiley is a former star athlete, competitive bull rider, and three-tour combat veteran. He's the founder of Radical Performance Acceleration and the creator of High Performance Meditation. For over a decade, he's now been behind the scenes doing life-altering work with powerful CEOs, entrepreneurs, leaders, and public figures. His work in the proverbial Navy SEAL training equivalent to high performance and leadership development, pushing even the elite beyond their limits so they not only hit their peak, but sustain it. He's got a really interesting background, and the way he executes his business is total immersion with his clients. Very unconventional, but very interesting. I really think you're going to get a lot out of this guy. Here is Wiley McGraw.
All right, I'm here with Wiley McGraw. Sometimes we hit pay dirt on like somebody that has done an amazing amount of interesting things. Not to, you know, this just entered my head. You know, I don't really, you know, we try to have a good conversation and I've done this so many times, but you know, it just hit my, and I'm sure this is not the first time Wiley's heard this, Tim McGraw's, skydiving, bull riding. Wiley's done all that, you know? So let's get into it. Where were you born from? Where are you born, boy? Where are you from? Where are you Irish from? Where are you from?
Well, we can go there too. I mean, my family heralds from Ireland and Scotland. So I have, I'm an American built with Irish and Scottish parts. And
then, you know, those that haven't seen Wiley, I mean, there's that character on the Vikings, the skinny brother, the skinnier brother. There's that guy with the beard. But they all have beards, but there's a guy with a little bit bigger beard. He's the brother, the main girl. You look like you could be his brother.
Is that right?
That's a compliment. See, we're starting off nice today.
I appreciate it. Yeah. Well, I'm from Southern California originally. I was born in Anaheim, lived all over Southern California, but primarily raised in that Orange County area. My stomping grounds were near Disneyland, Anaheim Hills. Grew up in a household of athletes. So my father being a semi-pro ball player, you know, put us into sports right out of the womb, it seems like. And I thrived in baseball as my primary focus. My brother was an all-state wrestler and football player. And then when my youngest brother came around, he was more into the long distance track and field and more of that type of running aspect of things, so we all found our own niches as young kids and did a lot of outdoor activities. We boxed, martial arts, the whole nine yards, the gamut. It was just constant exploration of life. There was never this caught up in indoor living where we were just behind a screen. And I feel bad for the kids these days, but that was our life growing up, is sports, athletics, outdoors, climbing, skiing, snowboarding, surfing in the water. Because my dad was an avid surfer, but primarily I trained as an elite baseball player. I was focused on pitching. I pitched for 13 years. My dad had me trained by pros that he knew and was friends with, a group around the California Angels pitching staff, because I'm from Anaheim, go figure. And took all of those lessons learned as a young athlete and really started to discover more about myself in the throes of the stress that surrounded me with being that kind of athlete.
I mean, the testosterone is like off the charts between just hearing this and then what we're going to get into. I mean, that's awesome, man. I mean, and it's like, it can't be pinned down, man. It is so, so diversified. It's amazing. So bull riding, I mean, no, I don't want to jump ahead too much, but like, was that even, sure. when was that an inkling? Like, when did that first start to come on the radar?
You know, what's interesting is, and I've had somewhat of a conversation around that kind of piece, but where did it come from and how did you get involved in it? And like I told you before we get on here, I was talking to that other gentleman on that show, asked the same question. And it's interesting how it was this true act of self-discovery under the immense pressure of expectation to be this like perfect athlete. So it wasn't necessarily something that I decided, you know, I need to like find bull riding or rodeo to free myself from the constraints that I felt as I got older. It was more like an intuitive next best step where even in junior high school, I think we were what, eighth grade, 13 years old. I saw a kid walking around with a cowboy hat and I always wondered who he was. And then when I met him in high school as a freshman, his name is Russell. And he just said, yeah, I had families that were farmer rancher type people. And he just loves country music and wears cowboy hats and Wrangler jeans and boots. And I thought that, you know, that guy's got a lot of gall, because in the atmosphere we grew up in Southern California, you know, you see a cowboy, you think surfer town, you know, it's kind of, you become the weirdo. And he stood in the face of hecklers and young kids as we are, as we're learning ourselves, we make fun of each other, we poke fun at people that are different than us. And he stood in that and did it anyway. And I thought that was very commendable. And for me, I was introduced to the country world by my mom. You know, my first concert was like Neil Diamond and Roy Orbison. I used to listen to when I was a kid, and I started getting into all the Gene Autry's and the just the old school stuff. But it was like, it got to the point, I think middle high school, where I couldn't handle the pressures of being pushed to be perfect as a pitcher. I loved the sport. I loved that I was thriving in the game. I had an 80 mile an hour fastball when I was 13 years old. What? I was able to do really good stuff, but the this existential pressure of my dad's need for me to be perfect and his drive for me to be the best of the best, the external pressures started to mix into the internal pressures of being good. And I just started to break inside. And mentally, I just said I couldn't take it anymore. So I leaned into more of that guy, the cowboy hat. And he introduced me to people in that world. And it just became this, like, this feels right for me. So I decided to start pulling away from what I was only told to do and started to discover more of what I wanted to do. And I found that transitional point was the epitome of what real change was supposed to feel like, despite the fact that my dad and my, you know, was really upset at me for doing that. He did not like that I was doing my own thing. And I didn't care. I did it anyway. And that is where I found real freedom for the first time in my life as a young teenager.
Well, that segues perfectly into, has anybody in your family been in the military?
I think every man in my family has served in the military, if I recall. Okay. Now, you know, it's...
That explains a lot.
Yeah, it's my grandfathers, both of them were World War II. My dad's father was on the D-Day beaches of Normandy and on the ships that was handling the naval gunfire. He was a signalman, so he was responsible for communications to the from the land to the ships to pound the Nazi bunkers. My mother's father was Army Air Corps, so they flew bombing runs over France, et cetera, during Normandy. So that history kind of, you know, permeated through our lives. I think all my uncles served. I had an uncle who was MACV SOG Special Forces in Vietnam, which those guys, you want to talk about an echelon above the rest. You want to talk about cojones, you know, these guys were just unbelievable, elite, next level dudes. So I grew up around hearing somewhat stories about that. And then my brothers and I never thought, do we join the military? Is it expected of us? It just, I think, was a fabric of who we are. And we felt as we got older, maybe we should start looking at potentially serving our country. So every man in our family, even my stepfather was a Desert Storm vet. So just normalized it. And it felt right when we got older. And we decided through our experiences in high school, hey, what do we really want to do with our lives? Got into a junior Marine Corps program from the boxing club that we were at in East Anaheim. We met a guy my dad knew was a gunnery sergeant. He ran this Devil Pups program. And we were like, okay, we got to go do this. And we fell in love with the structure. We fell in love with the discipline. We fell in love with what they stood for. And we realized it feels right internally to go serve our country first. Go put something and give back who we are, give our life to this nation before we go figure out who we want to be, you know, on our own. So that's why when we made our pact together in high school, when we were doing that, I was a sophomore and he was a freshman, my middle brother. We were like, hey, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I want to jump out of airplanes and go to Ranger school. And he said, well, I want to go to Buds. We're like, okay, let's figure out how we're going to go do that. And then it just eventually got to the point where we were old enough. The military came knocking. We chose to do it.
Everybody I talked to, you know, including this crusty bastard right here, that's my stepdad. He was a sergeant in the Marine Corps.
Nice.
And he came around when I was like 10. I tell this to every military guy because I respect, you know, Marines so much, respect the military. He's like, one more, you know, for 8 years, you know, until I was 18, you know, I was 10 years old. He's like, another birthday closer to the Marine Corps, another year getting closer to Marine Corps.
So yeah, you had it in your ear. Yeah.
I did, but I didn't, I was on the fence. I was like, you know, if it was 2 years, I probably would have gone with 4 years. I was like, oh man.
Well, that's a heavy ask. I mean, really, you think about people go, well, 4 years is not that long, but honestly, that's a heavy ask for anybody to say, give us 4 years of your life. Now people do it, but I totally understand. Yeah.
Yeah. So you joined the Navy, right?
No, I didn't. I joined the Army. I was with the in the combat arms. I served with the 3rd Infantry Brigade, 187 Infantry Regiment, the Rocket Sons out of the 101st Airborne Division. So that's, I was part of that first class combat unit. My brother went to, when I was in, joined when I was getting ready to go to my first deployment to Kosovo. He was joining the military and he went to the Navy. The people at Bud said, basically, hey, look, you've had a little bit of knee work done because of your athletics. He was a wrestler, an all-state football player, and he had a little bit of cartilage issues. So they said, we don't think you'll make it through Buds. And he laughed at them, was like, screw you, and went to the Army and joined the Rangers. So he became a Ranger with the 75th Ranger Special Operations in the Army. So that's kind of where we clashed into our world of being in the military.
Okay. You know, yeah. The McGraw family seems like when you guys went in the military, first of all, you know, I would think, you know, you think when you join the military, you think, okay, I could die. That's that's one thought that goes to your head. It seems like the McGraw family were like clownfish in a sea anemone almost. I mean, not to make simple, but like when, how was going through the process of boot camp and your life in the military?
I'll back up too, because it ties into the whole baseball breaking away, bull riding. And then my father, you know, kind of like
trying to
figure out how
this looks.
Right. Gaining a little more control over his son. Yeah, exactly. And being his oldest son, you know, a lot of expectation on the oldest boy. My middle brother is being a year and a half younger than my youngest brother, our youngest brother, 6 years younger than me. So that expectation was obviously amplified there. So when I was choosing to go into the world of rodeo, I found this whole new world of unleashing myself and feeling connected to the fear of the unknown and learning how to be intuitive and really connecting to my gut and staying calm in the midst of stress and chaos. The next best evolution for us at the time, it was almost like, well, why not join the military? I want to go be around other people.
How old were you when you were doing rodeo?
I started 16 years old. I started. Yeah. I got in my first.
It was after the military.
I rode into the military. So I was still riding bulls when I was in the Army. So, I get off on leave and I go into jackpots and competitively ride. I mean, I'd find places in Tennessee because I was stationed at the 101st, which is on the border of Kentucky and Tennessee. I'd go find places all over where I can get into these like small jackpots, $50 entry fees, you know, $1,000 jackpots, go ride some competitively, you know, that kind of stuff. But that segues into the understanding that when we got done with that Junior Marine Corps program, and we discovered that we have more inside us to give, there's so much more potential we want to unleash, we want to untap. The military feels right. It got to the point, it was almost like it came to head, if you will, that proverbial comes to a head version where I wanted to do it. And my dad was not happy with my decisions. That's okay. And then I showed up at home one day after I went to a rodeo that weekend, and there was an Army recruiter at our dinner table. And it's like that perfect serendipitous, okay, this makes sense. Clearly the universe is bringing this and my dad is doing it, so I need to go this direction. And I joined, you know, the delayed entry program when I was 17 years old and, you know, got into the active Army reserves. I started learning about military structure and discipline. I joined an MOS just to be close to home. And when I was in my unit, because I was an athlete, I was just destroying everything there down there. PT was easy. My first sergeant was like, look, you don't belong here. So when you turn 18, you should be active duty. You need to go be in the combat arms and participate. You know, I think you should be in special operations. You need to go do these kinds of things. And I felt like that's where I wanted to go anyway. So it just evolved from there. And then my brother followed suit. And then, of course, my youngest brother followed suit eventually. He got to the point where he joined and became a Navy Greenside FMF Corpsman with the Marines. So it just was this perfect evolution for our lives to discover more of what we're capable of in the most challenging of environments, which is the United States military.
Before we move forward, I want to know what that McGraw dinner table's like when everybody's there for like Thanksgiving or something. I want to know what the conversations are like. Give me a little texture of this before we move on.
How do I lay this bare here without being a little bit too... I wouldn't even say too vulnerable, but just, I think my family, they're off doing their own thing right now. I have been so focused on the nature of my work that I've been traveling around the world and in the country. I only work with maybe three very high powered people per year. It's very intense. My life is basically committed to the clients I work with. So I don't really have as much time or energy to always be present at home anywhere. So I know that they're doing their things. My youngest brother's back in the Navy as a commissioned officer, a medical doctor. My middle brother is off, you know, taking care of kids. You know, he's a teacher and he does like a lot of really cool stuff with them. And my family, they're retired doing their thing. And honestly, at this point, it's when we first got home from combat, our first, you know, tours of combat, I think the dinner table was very quiet. It was hard to really sit down and open up and know how to talk about war and really explain to people that even in our families that don't really understand, because again, they're coming from this outside in perspective. So I think that it was, how are you feeling? You know, the typical, you know, what's going on? Do you need any help? You know, that kind of, that's a typical conversation. but you could feel it. Like there was just this commonality there with each other, you know. And you know, my stepdad was a war veteran who's seen combat, you know, myself and then my middle brother, we all see war. It's, it just became like a unspoken language. And eventually, as we got older, we just kind of went our separate ways and did our thing. And we're out in the world, you know, making an impact the way that we're meant to. So that's the best way I can answer that question.
Yeah. Yeah. And that happens, you know, in every family, you know, people go, you know, life, you know, moves on, but knowing what, how that dinner table was, you know, when everybody does get together, just kind of gives me a little bit of, I was just curious about that.
Well, you know, I'll tell you this much, Michael, it's the one thing I do remember and I value is sitting down, you know, when we were with our mother and my stepfather, him being a war veteran and having that unspoken understanding of, you know, when people are outside of the military, the common question we get, especially in combat arms, is how many people have you killed? And, you know, if you ask any veterans, nowadays, it's almost not taboo as much to just share, hey, look, I've been in gunfights, I've killed bad guys, you know, that's our job and that's what we do. But it still comes across as like a little bit invasive when people that don't understand ask that question rather than kind of approaching of like, what did you learn in the military? Well, what were your favorite times? What were the good times? Because war is a completely different beast altogether and it does do a lot to you. So sitting down at the table with them, we were able to, like four or five of us at a time, we all, except my mother, who, but obviously being privy to it, we're able to have a little bit more of a loose conversation because we had all experienced similar combat situations. So telling those stories became fun, especially when we were pouring a little whiskey or having, you know, some good food and we'd sit in the backyard and just kind of talk until the, you know, till midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning and just sharing combat stories. Those were the fun times. Other times it was, we never talked about it. Other family members, we just kept quiet about it. We just were stoic and allowed ourselves to, you know, talk about the foods and the weather and the sports that are on the TV. So that's another aspect of it that I remember.
Right.
Yeah.
Your military career, how long was it?
6 years active duty, just right around there. Three tours overseas. Yeah.
Take us through some quick milestones to get us through that period and explain to us, you know, a little bit about it. I know it's tough, but yeah.
You know, I loved boot camp. I think I really enjoyed, I was a squad leader in boot camp right off the bat. I did it twice, interestingly enough. So when I joined the reserves, I had to go to boot camp. So I did like that 9 week boot camp, came home, kind of gave me some really good structure and discipline even moving forward to finish out, you know, my last year of high school. But, you know, it changed everything for me. And I realized when I got home and I was around all the kids in my class, I felt a completely different just essence. I realized, you know what, wow, this whole new world that I just stepped into is changing the way that I perceive life in general and how people relate to each other and how they interact with stress and how they manage themselves in uncomfortable situations, if you will, even in sports or in social settings in high school. And then I went active duty and I went to boot camp again because in combat arms, they need you to go through a completely different training protocol. So I missed out. I got to skip the first 3 weeks of hell that comes with being in boot camp because they don't need to worry about breaking me down so much that they do the first 3 weeks as they call it. But I still was there for 14 weeks. And then I went to another 3 weeks of my specialty school because my specialty, my MOS, if you will, or military occupational specialty was mortars. I was an indirect fire infantryman. So I specialize in mortar gun systems. Mm. And that is, you know, we're a specialized light infantry that is in direct contact with combat commanders on the ground. And our weapon systems are highly used in the GWAT, the geo, you know, global war on terrorism over the last 20 years. We were very much utilized. So I loved it. I loved the structure. I was a squad leader. I was in charge of men at a young age. I was learning how to really lead even in that boot camp scenario. And I did it all the way through the entire time. Learning more about myself, learning what I'm capable of under immense pressure and responsibility for, you know, 9 guys in my squad, the drill sergeants coming down and saying, hey, look, if they screw up, it's on you. So at the end of the day, I had to maintain so much more than just my own self-discipline. I had to take care of these people and give them that like structure that they needed so they can thrive and we can all work together as a team. And it really built up confidence in being able to understand leaders, real leaders, not just a title or not a position, come to the table from a different approach. They have this ability to take care of the people to the left and the right of them. They realize that these people matter first. I'm secondary. And if I show up and create an atmosphere, an environment for these people to provide information and insight as well as listen to my leadership, we will all win at the end of the day. And then I took that into my duty station with the 101st and I fell in love with it. And I met some really bad leaders when I got to the unit as a private. And it really shook me up because I thought, this is not how it's supposed to feel. But then I realized, you know what? Bull riding taught me a lot about this moment. So let me realize, let me look at the leaders that I respect, take good qualities from them, disregard the bad leaders. And as I get promoted and I grow in the ladder of this type of hierarchy, I'll know exactly how to develop my own leadership style when I get put in charge of guys in combat situations, et cetera, which is what happened. So through those 6 years and the three tours, I volunteered to go to Kosovo. I enjoyed the heck out of it when I transferred to this from the 81 platoon that I was 81 millimeter platoon, which is a bigger mortar gun, to the smaller 60 mortar line section. I loved it. And I thrived in it. I wanted to go to Ranger school. I wanted to go to air, you know, get my jump wings because, long story short, that was promised to me and taken away, which is what happens in the military sometimes. But I learned how to adapt and move and overcome when things don't go to plan. And I think that's the biggest thing that people don't take enough time without in their lives is, how do I adjust fire, if you will, to life when life does not show up the way that I expect it to or how I've planned for it? How do I modify while still staying on task, while still completing that focus? So giving myself that mental discipline to realize that life is not going to always go as planned and it's going to be chaotic sometimes. And I have to learn how to adapt into yielding to that fear of the unknown when it shows up, embracing the suck that happens when things don't go as planned, and then still being able to lead myself and others through that. To me, that was the ultimate thing I took away from the military, especially going to war.
Which segues into your career right afterwards, but not right afterwards. I don't know, you know, how quickly you went into what you kind of do now, but when you got back, you know, what did you get into, and how did you get into kind of like what you're doing now?
I think with it, I don't think people, don't be fooled. Most people that get out of the military, as I've found and discovered in my experience, it's not like we transition right out of the military and are running successful, you know, 7, 8, 9 figure businesses. It's, you know, we hear these glorified stories. Now, some people can do that. There are some people that get out of the military and instantly transition into like the work that they're doing now. And that's fine because they are in a different position and they have a different capacity. That's okay. When I specifically left the armed forces, I struggled. I wanted to stay in. And the biggest problem that I had was when I joined, I had airborne in my contract. It was the only school I ever really wanted, and they eventually get to Ranger school. They took airborne from me because the needs of the Army, they had to give it to West Point cadets. I was like, okay, whatever. I'll just stay and do whatever I got to do. Hey, you're going to Fort Campbell 101st. They've got air assault school, 10 hardest days in the Army. Go get your air assault badge. Cool. I got air assault qualified. Eventually I got my expert infantryman's badge, which is another coveted badge for infantry guys. It means you're an expert in your field of craft. I loved it. So when I reenlisted, I said, hey guys, look, I'll give you another 3 years of my life. I just want airborne school. And they literally were like, hey, we're going to do our best. And one of the things that they love doing is telling you that we're going to do our best. We're going to do our best. And they came back and were like, we can't get it for you. And I said, that's not acceptable. I'm going to give you 3 years of my life. Go get it. And they came back and said, we tried. We just can't. I said, screw it. I still want to stay in. So I did. I can get it again. I was willing to embrace and just move through it. Then we went to, you know, to the next training phase. And I said, look, I want to go to Ranger school. So I started training to go to pre-Ranger. They gave me the permission to break off from the unit and go do my own thing with my buddy. And we did. Came back and said, sorry, guys, we only got one slot. My buddy, because he was, you know, in a different squad, a different position, got the priority, gave that to him. So I was constantly getting kicked around by the military with what I wanted. And all I wanted to do was improve myself and my leadership. I thought, fine, whatever. So my third tour in Iraq, I'm sitting with my company commander at 2 o'clock in the morning, my first sergeant, my section sergeant. I just put my guys up on their guard post. I came back, say, hey, we want to talk to you about your reenlistment. Perfect. I'm a corporal at the time. So I'm an E4 corporal, a junior NCO, non-commissioned officer, in charge of a 60 mortar squad, 4 guys. And they sit me down and they say, hey, check it out, Corporal McGraw. We'd love to keep you. You're a great asset. You know, what do you want? What do you want to do? And I said, look, I want my airborne wings. I just want to go to jump school. I want to go to Ranger school, and I should have been promoted to sergeant already. Are those three things possible? And I'm literally at my wit's end, almost 6 years in active duty, 3 tours. And they said, we can do that for you. We will put you through the board here in Iraq, because we're going to probably be here for another 6 months or whatever it is. We'll put you through the board, promote you to sergeant. We'll get you when we get home from combat. We'll get you into jump school, and then eventually go to pre-Ranger and get you into Ranger slot down in Fort Benning and get your Ranger qualified. I was like, fantastic. They said, but it's going to require you to give us 6 years of your life. And I sat with that and I thought, that's a heavy, heavy ask for me. You're going to give me things that I've already should have had, but you want 6 more years. I don't even know if I have the gall to like let in, give into that. Like 6 more is a heavy duty thing. So I fought that, Michael. I fought that really hard. And that was a big deal. So I decided, you know what? I want to go create something for myself. I think it's time to take my leadership elsewhere and do something where I don't feel like I'm being held back by the powers that be. Break away, even though I felt bad leaving my guys. I didn't want to go. It's crazy. The kinetic times of the war really kicked off after, even more so after I left. I mean, 05 to 08 was like, that was insane. I mean, things were really crazy. And I kind of missed that. I was like, I should have gotten it stayed and gotten back into the fight. But I got out of the military and I sought after this idea of how do I better who I am first before I figure out what I'm able to create and do. And I thought, let me just go become a firefighter because that's where the next brotherhood becomes. Right.
I'm sorry. It's just,
no, it's laugh.
Yeah. Cool. No, it's just, it sounds, it's fun. It's great. I mean, look, there are people that have high standards and Wiley, the way you just said that, people, you know, being a fireman's not, I know firemen.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's awesome. Go ahead. I'm laughing in a good way.
Yeah, of course. You know, Sharon here too. I have so much I can go into with it, but to be blunt, I got in the military and didn't really know how that was going to look. So what I did was I had connections in the area I live because I was near Nashville, Tennessee. I have the background of being combat arms. So I had friends of mine. I got a job right away, kind of put some money in my pocket. I had terminal leave is what they call that. So I had 78 days. So I'm still essentially in the Army, but I was on vacation being paid by the military while still, you know, working a part-time job, just kind of put my feet, plant them, figure out what I want to do. I eventually got a job working security, working private security. I was around country music stars, producers of Music Row, meeting all these different people. And I did that for a little bit as I was researching and reading and learning about that whole self-development world. I wanted to better who I was. I wanted to explore what people talk about, which is that self-mastery, if you will. And again, and labels are just labels. For me, it's like, how do I deal with my stress from what I went through so that I can be as best as possible for what I'm going to go do and put out into the world? And I don't know why I thought that way, but I was still in a position of trying to figure that out. So anybody, I was just, I don't want to say lost, but it was just, where do I put my feet? And there was a constant like questioning from my family. What are you doing? I was like, look, I'm doing what I need to do right now. I'm figuring myself out. And I got on that path of facing myself, dealing with stress, battling through the demons that I knew I was carrying around from family dynamics to the bull riding world, to the military combat, how these demons are going to affect me and my performance out in the world. That matters. So it got to the point where a few years went by, I moved home to California. And I couldn't be around just people in their, I want to say, mediocrity, if you will, and their inability to really want to be better. So I broke away from that. And I think in 2008, I really had this idea of fighting and struggling again. I got my fire, you know, firefighting path is on track. I'm getting ready to go to the academy, but something feels like I need to create something else. It doesn't feel right either. And I'm going, dude, I could be a fireman. I can have that brotherhood. I can go fight fires. And it's like, I ended up connecting with my now business partner, who she said, look, you are a firefighter, but not in the way that you think you are. You have a skill and a gift that I can see and I can sense when you're around people, when you're around men, how they tell you their deepest, darkest truths. They erupt, they connect with you in a different way. She's, this is what you're meant to be doing. You're meant to go on out into the world and really providing people this environment like you experienced so they can erupt, become their best. They can stay on top of their game. Let's look at how we can build that around who you are. And it was like a week later, I had this guy come and go, hey, a veteran goes, hey, look, I've been watching you walk around the campus. You know, I got my degree. He's like, you carry yourself differently. I'm dealing and battling with pain and I'm suffering. I want to know what it's like to be, feel free like you feel. I sense this. Will you coach me? And it was like the perfect, this makes sense. So I broke away from the firefighting world and I sat down with this guy and I started helping him heal through PTSD, battling his demons with him in the trenches. He would come to my place. We'd spend days together. We'd break bread. I'd help him literally navigate the world of not taking medications, learning how to meditate, bringing a whole new holistic approach to his life that within a matter of weeks, this guy was like sleeping better at night. His life was transformed. He was able to get a job he wanted and sustain it. And it just got to the point where word of mouth. People were like, hey, is this the guy you were telling me about? Yeah, that's the guy that changed my life. You need to work with him. And I started working with combat veterans across all different branches, dealing with the same issues, to the point where the VA, unofficially, people I knew there were like, hey, Wiley, you know, hush, hush. Can we send you some veterans that really want to do more than the pharmaceutical approach or the talk therapy approach to dealing with stress? They want to actually win the war that's within and birth a whole new world of radical performance acceleration. I founded that basically in 2008 was kind of where the idea was really founded and started birthing there. And it just took off. It became a word of mouth business behind the scenes where clients were introducing me to their doctors, their lawyer friends. I had one client who was a former JSOC intelligence guy who flew Reaper drones during the global war on terrorism. Say, hey, my good friend is a professional baseball player. Can you sit down and talk to him? And lo and behold, people at that level were like, hey, Wiley, I need you. And it just eventually evolved the fact that I was built to work with these more powerful people because they had the capacity, they had the understanding, they had the ability to lean in to the intensity and the self-mastery that I put them through. And now that's my whole mission is just taking my gift, go out in the world and basically optimizing these people's lives. So the impact they have on and the influence they have on the masses is exponential and sustainable rather than this divisiveness that we keep seeing out in the world. So that's a long story short.
You know, listening to this, I keep on thinking about, you know, especially stuff that's going on lately with ice water therapy, you know, sticking yourself in there 96 and then extreme heat therapy. You know, and I know a lot of people that have had a lot of adversity physically also in their life. 94-year-old Ben Lesser, who's been on the show, a Holocaust survivor, has been, you know,
saw that
beaten halfway to his life, you know, and it's like, how do they, you know, you would think that these people, because of those injuries and because of that adversity mentally, physically, they might die young. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I have an uncle to my wife, you know, and he was, tortured and wasn't Jewish, but he was Polish, and they tortured the shit out of them too, you know. He lived to be in his 90s. And I was like thinking, you know, listening to what you're talking about and everything that you put yourself through with the bull riding and the military and the atmosphere you grew up with, and I'm wondering, one, do you not just talk like you said, is there some physical feats, because you are a testament to like iron sharpers iron. You look healthy as hell, you know. Are there any aspects of give us some bullet points of what methodologies that you use for your personal development program?
Right. Well, that's first, I don't do a program. So that's a big one for people to hear, is the work I do is not a program at all whatsoever. Everything that I have built is about the interpersonal relationship that I have with the individual. It's holistic. My work is very holistic, and it's an inside out approach. Most personal development today, and I'm candidly going to say this, despite how whatever people's reactions are to it, is the outside in approach. They are trying to problem solve based on their own limited understanding or formal education on what they think the problem really is or where it is actually birthed from. Most human beings and their difficulties are not in the problems they experience themselves, but they come from deeper, more unconscious, energetic, emotional demons, if you will, as I call them that. It's just, I use that word now. Now everybody's talking about it. That's all you hear in social media, demons. It's funny. I've been using that word for 14 years now, but demons that plague people, personal demons, these wars within us that come from unresolved family traumas, dynamics that were dysfunctional, people's inability to face their own truth. We are quick to see the flaws of other people. And I think there was a Stoic Seneca maybe said that as well. We are quick to see or hold the vision of flaws of others, but we will turn our backs quickly on our own. And for me, I'm like, yeah, that makes a little sense. We are quick to fight other people, but we refuse to fight our own demons. And that's the fundamental thing, that flaw that I've experienced in personal development when I got out of the military. I never followed gurus. I never found myself really feeling like, oh, I want to know what Tony Robbins is doing. I want to know what this guy is doing, because I recognized quickly from that gift I had and that I found in the throes of war, my ability to actually see the real blind spots and how people are living their lives and operating, why they're manifesting scenarios and situations in their life. I discovered that for myself and realized something's different about me. It was all my life. I went, wow, this makes total sense on how I was the black sheep of the family and how people acted towards me and how people tell me all their truth. This makes total sense. So what I go to in my work is I literally integrate into the lives of the individual I work with. My life becomes their life. I come to the table from I have the worst business model ever because I give more than I receive. Right. Granted, the clients that I work with make large investments in having this support, but the money is part of the dynamic in which I transform them. It's a complete life overhaul where I live with them. I travel with them. I'm with them 24/7, where I'm like that next best friend they've ever had. I'm the brother they never had. I'm the battle buddy that's in the trenches with them. So we can combat whatever is plaguing them that is literally sticking or limiting their power and potential for being fully actualized. There's no more programmatic thinking. There's no marketing. There's no like step-by-step processes because all of those things do in fact still leave gaps in limitation and performance. When you try to apply a system to a human being, it doesn't fully work the way you think it's going to work. Now, granted, there are benefits to that stuff. It does create some, quote, results. People have made money. They feel like they're progressing in business. But think about this, Michael, and your audience is probably going to listen to this part. Making money and growing a business and becoming popular are all byproducts of accumulation skill sets and achievement. They are not what defines success and peak performance. Performance has everything to do with how well you live your life. It is a true measurement of who you are in relationship to yourself. It's a constant act of self-discovery because you are at the core your own performance, and how you put that out into the world and permeate in the things you do matters. So if you are still battling your own demons and you are still sucking it up and suppressing them, you're trying to override it, you're part of the hack your way to success community and go to these, you know, programs, as I call the coffee and sugar high of personal development, where you feel motivated and you're dancing around with people and you're hugging each other and you've got a, you know, this really cool approach to growth. And then you go back into your world and privately you're miserable and you're not fulfilled and you're feeling like something's still missing. To me, that's unacceptable, which is why when I find the celebrities I work with, the pro athletes, the CEOs, the entrepreneurs, it doesn't matter what their title is. These are people who've done it all. And they're still sitting there going, something's still missing. What am I doing? And I have found most people that are doing that are trying to run away from something. They're in this alignment of focused only on achievement over here. And they're going to try to turn around and buy their way out of the pain they're in later. And it does not work that way. So my work that I do is why I'm completely different. I'm 100% focused on the people first. And the byproduct of that might be I might make a good living. But to me, the commitment of my mission is more important than trying to scale. I can't scale my business. I can't do anything like everybody else. I'm an elite, high-level resource that comes in and says, my job, all I'm built to do is optimize the people you follow. Make them elite so they can actually uplift you as well, rather than keep you in this constant grind and chase of more and trying to figure out what's next. You actually know who you are, truly, without all your stress, operating at your best, most highest level of performance, experiencing the growth that you are meant to experience, rather than you try to figure out if you are supposed to have $1 billion or $1 million, or if you're supposed to be the influencer you think you are or you're not. That's the nature of my work and why I do what I do so differently, is because everybody else, it's all about reciprocity, transactional nature. What about me first? How do I make money? How do I scale? And for me, I'm like, how do I un-F these people first?
That's right. That's part of your marker.
Yeah. And again, I don't want to throw it. It's like, how do I do that so they can live an optimized life? And I came out of the shadows after 12 years with the pandemic started, because I am tired of watching the world burn. I'm more every day looking at social media and going, what are we listening to? It's demons talking to demons. People don't know who they really are. They don't know what they're even saying to each other. It's passive aggressive. It's argumentation. Everyone wants to be right. No one is problem solving to do what's right. And our leaders are infecting other people. They're infecting the masses because they have not faced their own truth. Right. So that's my diatribe stop there, but that's the nature of my work and why I do what I do. I commit my life to these people. It's not just some business to me.
It's fascinating. There's some interesting questions here. So
yeah,
it's interesting because the way to really learn, you know, you can go to a seminar, and seminars are great because you do have immersion there, but then you walk away. Having a live-in coach taking, you know, in real time, you know, because that's when, and then making paradigm shifts as you go along.
In life, as it happens.
Yeah. And that's valuable. It's expensive. I've kind of done something like that, you know, for 4 years, a little over, won't get into that. It's a long story, but, The interesting thing about, you know, because this is like almost like sounds like a 24/7. I want to kind of get in the weeds on one thing.
Yeah, go for it.
Because that would be fun and interesting about what you do, because it's unique. When some people that you're with, what are some dynamics that you've run into when you're like, you're with a high profile person and you're, it's not like you're like in meeting with them for 8 hours, you know?
No.
This is like immersion.
Well, this is the thing. Before I even decide to work with someone,
yeah,
I call it the calibration. I'm doing it right now with a woman who's a multi seven figure law firm, you know, has other and a whole other brand that she wants to build. But again, I come to the table going, look, if you think you're going to go out in the world, you're going to override the chaos that's here at your house, and you're going to go out and build a brand on this, you're going to fail and you're going to hit walls and you're going to be 2 years down the road, more money gone. And you're going to go, why do I still feel the same way? I might have some movement. So right now, what I call is the calibration. I commit and give. I connect with them. We talk on the phone. We break bread. We spend time texting as needed. I give insights. I calibrate their energy to me so they can start to erupt and start to experience all the different parts of them that want to just lean into the easy, comfortable stuff. And that's what human beings are designed to do. We don't like dealing with the very ugly, uncomfortable things, which is why we avoid it. And then we talk in concept to each other about being outside our comfort zone and doing the challenging things, but very few people actually really step towards that stuff. Right. And I hear questions like, how is it those people are Navy SEALs and you guys are these elite people? It's because we're willing to step towards those things that scare us the most. That is an abnormal thing to do. Why do you jump out of airplanes? That's abnormal because I love it. It's freedom. Going back to your question is, I calibrate them first. The longest calibration period I've ever had was with a public figure, big public figure in the personal development space. I spent 8 months with him before he became a client.
Wow.
And I invested my own time, my own money, my own resources, because I knew when I introduced him from a mutual friend, PR person, he was in a dire strait situation and there was so much going on. I had to sift through all of that just to get him to realize there is real love and trust out there that actually cares only about him and making him his best. Not everybody that puts their hand out going, what's in it for me? And that's what he experienced. And there was, long story short, that's what most of those people at the top experience. They can't trust anybody. They have yes men around them. They have crisis management teams that encapsulate their demons, not actually resolve them. They have therapists who are in cahoots with their managers and publicists that come on table. And they're like, well, I'm working with a therapist. Yeah, but that person, there's a benefit to them to doing that, being connected to you. They don't have a real confidant who is in it 100% for them. So the common theme here in swimming in these weeds is these people don't have someone who actually comes into their life holistically, who cares about them from a place where no stone is left unturned. Nothing is off limits. They learn how to fully surrender to truth, not an opinion or perspective, but real truth. They learn how to submit and let go of control. They realize that that is what has been hindering them their entire life. And when they do that, I get them to the most vulnerable state they've ever been in, because that trust has been established through our conversations and connections. And when that happens, I get the real them. I get to see where all of the demons are lying around and wait. And we battle them in real time, in relationship. It's not here's a process I'm going to put you through today, John. You're going to go through X. Doesn't happen that way. I don't know what's going to happen until I'm integrated with them. Then we go where we need to go, but nothing is off limits. There's no, well, we're not going to talk about that. Yeah, we are, because that's the very thing that's kind of screwing you right now. And it could be how they relate to money, to their relationship dynamics, their own health. And the common theme that I have found with most people, even those that go to the gym all the time, is their health sucks. They are all, at the end of the day, not living as optimally from their health perspective. So when we work with clients, that's tendently, we bring our network of specialists that I've curated across the field of human performance, from doctors to, you know, naturopathic medicine to function, all of it. I have these resources that work in tandem with me as needed. And I go, here's my fitness expert who comes in and knows how to rehabilitate your old injuries. Here's my naturopathic doctor who knows how to deal with all of your functionality when it comes to your brain function and health and your hormones, whatever it might be. It is a holistic surrounding them, real time, showing them what it's like to truly be cared for. And every single client I've worked with goes, I've never had anybody care for me the way you've cared for me. I've never had anybody take care of all aspects of my life in this way. And the results become exponential growth in their wealth and impact the bottom line. They make more money. They have better success in their overall relationship dynamics. They feel freer, at peace inside. And that translates into their ability to manage volatility and stress and chaos that surrounds them in their respective professions. So I can go on and on, but that's a generally the gist of what happens when I work with people. It's not your David Goggins, you know, doing like Living with a Seal, where he gets you up at 4 o'clock in the morning. He's just going to physically train you, because that's one piece of it. You can beat someone up physically all day long, but if you're not addressing every other area of their life simultaneously, you're going to still leave chips on the table. And those people, they might follow your routines in the morning, feel motivated 4:30 in the morning. I'm like Jocko and I'm going to get up and I'm going to go out and do it. But they're going to, a few years down, they're chasing an idea. They're not living it from who they really are. And I'm not saying those guys have value. There is value to what they're talking about, even especially with Jocko. It's just, dude, who are you without the stress is what I call the demons. Have you ever faced who you really are? And the answer usually is no. They've never had it.
The value that I see in here is also, it's expensive because to do this, but there's physical knowledge and then there's mental knowledge. And mental knowledge was something that I understand that. That's right. But you haven't gone through the physical act and putting in your nervous system and carrying through the concept that you have learned. So now we're in real time. You're doing your life. You come through a crossroad and there's a billion crossroads throughout the day. And you're the guy who say, well, whoa, wait. Now we're going to make the paradigm shift adjustment, real time 24/7. And now it's that fit that, but I knew about that. Yeah. But now you're doing it. I've heard that too.
Cause I've, you know, some of the clients I work with have worked directly with Tony and other people. And they're like, well, I already know all this stuff. Yeah. But look at you, your application of it has never actually integrated. And it goes beyond just your conceptualized, compartmentalized thinking. And that doesn't actually transform you. Reading books don't transform you. They can change perspectives. They can give you new insights and new tactics. So like I just cracked open for the first time, which is crazy, The Art of War. And I've been wanting to read that book forever. And it's like, I realized that the tactics that I'm listening to or reading in my head, I understand them because of the real world application to it. But when somebody else that has never gone through the experience doesn't understand it and they read it, they're going to try to apply it based on their own perceived understanding of it. And that's what's going to cause them to trip and fall constantly. And they're never going to experience what the real integration feels like or how it can create results for themselves. So the reason why it is, quote, I don't even use the word, it is expensive. It's a higher investment, is because of the capacity of that individual to match them. It's like, I sat down and had a conversation with a billionaire. Do you think that billionaire is going to respect the level of intensity and the kind of work that I do, if I tell him it's $5,000, no, he's going to look at it like, what? Like what kind of the capacity? And I want people to hear that. It's your capacity is different from Michael's capacity. My capacity is different from John's capacity. We all have a different capacity of performance. We might be human beings and equality from being human, but when it comes to every other part of us, we're not. We are different capacities and we need to respect that. And we need to stretch it properly by putting ourselves in uncomfortable situations and getting excited about things that scare us. Even if it's a simple, hard conversation with an employee or a family member that you didn't want to have or you're avoiding. I tell people that sometimes it starts there. I don't want to do that. I don't want to confront that. I'm scared of what the reaction is going to be. That might be the very place you need to go that changes your financial situation, but you're so unaware of how those two connect, because everybody wants to think it's A to B. They want to think linear. They want to think, well, problem with money means this over here. And rather than realize that maybe the problem with money has to do with the fact that you're not confronting the employee over here and you're not dealing with the department over here that's been screwing this up and you're just avoiding it. That avoidance is causing you to just expend more energy and that's causing you to leak. And that stress is affecting your ability to manifest or receive more. And they don't understand that. They go, I got to problem solve from figuring out how to set in a new structure or a new payment plan or a new processing system. And it's still not going to work. So that's why it comes to the table of like who you are matters and what your capacities matters. And when I work with people, it all depends on where they're at, which is why I take that investment aspect of it. And then I reinvest back in them too. Yeah. It's a holistic inside out approach.
I get it. And you know, what's interesting as you were talking about Sun Tzu and you know, and all the reps that you've done, you know, throughout the years and everything that you have done, when you again go back to teach somebody, you have unconscious competence. And then when you're reading the, you know, certain aspects of when you're coaching somebody, you know, you got to bring it to the level of conscious competence, right? And then you're like, oh yeah, I knew about that, but I didn't, wasn't aware that I'd known that's what I was doing. So now when you're coaching somebody, you have to have somewhat of a ledger or some type of, you know, like, you know, things where you're, you know, you to make sure that it's just not, you know, unconscious competence that you're coaching, that you have an understanding, you know, like formally of what you're doing. Have you run into a lot of that now that you, because you have this amazing amount of like, you know, data set of like your life and everything, military and everything that you come back and now you're coaching these people, you know, like, and then you read a book like Sun Tzu, you're like, oh yeah, that's right. That's what I do. You know, and you run into kind of a lot of that.
Absolutely. And what's great is because I practice, you know, in my, one of my off time things is practicing Kung Fu. And I work with a teacher. Well, it's funny because I have friends, you know, they're MMA guys, jiu-jitsu guys, and they're the ones that actually are legit jiu-jitsu guys, like respect and understand. They don't make, they give me sometimes some shit where, so they're like, you know, do you do like real fighting or is it just the fake stuff? You know, and they have fun with me like that. And I understand what they're going through, but I practice a very special, what's called, it's a secret form of it. What you see people doing out in the parks is, it's called classical Tai Chi. That is still a form of Kung Fu, but the reason why it's taught to the masses that way is because most people are animalistic. They can't handle the actual martial application of what real Kung Fu actually is for, because the Chinese developed it for war. They developed it to just basically maim and kill someone in self-defense. It's not designed to get into a ring and fight rounds. It's not designed to spar. You can't spar with it. You have to learn how to train. And Kung Fu to me wasn't about the martial application. It was about the integration. It was about understanding who you are and how you're connected to nature and the universe. That's where their principles and philosophies are. How does nature move? How fluid is nature? Bruce Lee talks about being fluid like nature. To me, I saw that in the book as well. I'm like, yes, I know those Taoist principles and those unbelievable tactics of war, et cetera, because I've learned them for years practicing this sacred art in a more secret form of Kung Fu, Bagua, you know, Shaolin, all these different things I do. And I take and really utilize those lessons and understandings as part of the work I do. But it's really coming back to the table is I don't coach people. My clients call me a performance accelerator. I'm looking like, hey, look, you can call me whatever you want to. I'm basically your battle buddy who's in the trenches with you. And I'm by your side 24/7 as stuff is happening, as life is transforming, as things are coming up and we're going after it head on. In the moment, it's like most coaches don't do that. They coach from how do I give you tactics and strategies and how do I ask you questions so you can find the solutions? And then they step back and let you kind of figure it out. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if you really want to be optimal and you want to know what your life is like without all the chaos, you really need to go to another place with that. Your coaches need to put you in positions that are really radical and really challenging. So I take formal education that I've learned over the years, studying alternative medicine, psychology. Those are assets to what I do. But they are not what make up what I do. My life experiences help make up what I do. They were my biggest mentors, and I take them and bring them to table holistically and go, part of my gift is integrated into these experiences. And then what surrounds it is that formal education. And holistically, I come in as this basically nuclear bomb and I explode all your garbage and I make you see who you really are, because you only truly know someone when you fight them. Other than that, humans are adept at masking who they really are, their true intentions, and they're really, really quick to push away things that scare them, real things that scare them, stuff that makes them actually realize, wow, I haven't worked on myself the way I thought I have. Push that away. Yeah.
So there's 24/7. This is a dynamic. I want to go back to that because there's some, this is light and little levity. We got to, without naming names, because, you know, but what are some funny circumstances? I mean, you have to, because when the real person comes out, you know, after you're in the, you know, month four, you know, whatever, you've been working with them and all the, and then, because everybody has all levels of subpersonalities and angers and emotions. And, you know, what are some funny things that you, dynamics that you've, you know, that's rarefied, you know, what you've done, you know? So what are any things that you can kind of share?
As far as from a levity standpoint, you're asking, correct?
I imagine you're sitting there with like a billionaire, like, you know, from Hollywood, and he's on his, you know, G6, you know, and your guys are up in the plane, you know, and then he's like, you know, they're throwing peanuts at you because like, he's like, no, or like, I don't know. Like I can't, it's limitless. So like,
that's a good point. I had a guy like that.
Everybody's probably got their point. You know, everybody has that point too. If you have real growth.
Well, that's the thing. In my work, anything goes.
Yeah.
say they don't have people at the top. They, when think about everybody that is at the top, when they rise to the, they all rise to the top together. They all build success together. And then they're all up there trying to help each other. You know, it's like Will Smith is not going to help, you know, Kanye West. They might give each other some like advice, you know, like, hey man, I shouldn't say that on social media. But that's not going to get, it doesn't matter how much Denzel Washington wants to tell Will Smith, hey man, you know, you should deal with your stuff and go see a therapist. That's not going to change the situation of why he's still doing or dealing with what he's dealing with. Those are the types of people I work with. So when I'm around them, they've never had someone who goes, I don't care who you are. I don't care what your background is. I don't care what your money is, your status. I see the real you. And they go, oh crap, this guy sees the real me. So what ends up happening is they're stripped down. There is no hiding when I'm around them. And they feel that. They feel it. And that's what makes them kind of go, oh, I love this guy. I want him near me, but I push him away. But they have, that's the reaction they get with everyone. Some run away from me. Some run towards me. Either way, they're going to be kicking and screaming. So when we get together and do this work, they understand this is where the real magic's going to happen, because I'm actually being seen for the first time the right way. There is battle that happens together, but it's a place for them in the privacy and confidentiality and the intimacy that we have, where they know they can completely let go and be that version. So yeah, we can actually do something with it. Where
I know you got a, I know you can't name a name, but I know you got a situation that you're like, that was a dynamic, funny situation because of this type of interactions, you know.
I'm trying to think about those.
I mean, come on. I'm just thinking about it. I was like, you know, it's...
I'm trying to... I want to make sure that I give something, but I don't want to be inauthentic to the fact that my work is very intense, and but it's very rewarding. It is literally the most rewarding thing these people have ever done, and I'm just going to share that... When people are done with me, there is no more to do. They get to a place where it's a complete, they don't even remember. Clients will say, I don't even remember who I was before I started with you. Mm. And that's real transformation. It's not the idea of it where they got some, it's, they don't know who they were prior, and they are living a life that they're like, wow, I know what peace and freedom is supposed to actually feel like for the first time. But during the process, I've had all
discomfort,
wrestling matches with clients, like in their living room. Underneath a 70-inch TV with all their, like, I've literally gotten in their face because I've had to literally get their ego to sit the hell down. And it's funny, we end up wrestling on the ground, and I put them in different like arm bars and different things that I do with them. Yeah. And I sometimes let them have their moments. And it's funny, we start laughing when that happens. Yeah. And then the emotions start coming out and the connection starts happening. And then they go and they sit up. Sometimes the physicality has to happen so we can break through things. I've thrown clients out of airplanes and they get on the ground and they've literally like, I had one guy, he like...
With a parachute, by the way.
With the parachute. I don't throw him out without it. But I've had to do that to get them through those very rigid, gripping around, 30 years I've been doing this, and who are you, and all of the good stuff. It's like, this is what love feels like, man. This is what real care feels like. I'm a completely different beast, which is why, again, worst business model, but ultimately, this is the place, if you are a leader and you want to be your best, that's why I do what I do. But those experiences are happening where I've had all out wrestling matches to what did I do? I put someone in like these big, you know, those big clear balls where I push them and make them slam into each other. And like, I've done anything and everything I do to bring a little bit of fun to the table as part of, because it's holistic. It needs them to realize it's serious, but at the same time, you're human. And we need to realize that if you can't laugh at some of the crap that we're going through, and you take it to the, and you hold on to this idea that this is just, I can't believe I'm doing it. We're never going to break through the fear that you're actually letting win right now. So we have to change the dynamic. So the best way was, I think the one I remember was that public figure that I was in his living room at like 9:30 at night, living with him, wrestling him on his living room floor while his kid was sitting in the next room. It's like, it's nature of the beast, man. And we were laughing and crying and having a good time. But what was beautiful was we were working through something very serious that he was carrying around inside him that he was refusing to let go, even though he knew he needed to. And it was stifling his ability to close deals for his business. It was really killing his ability to just make more money that he knew he needed because he was holding up so much over here. When we went through that experience, that intense fight together, it's like he got on a phone call the next morning and closed $150,000 coaching thing. So it was like, this is what it takes, guys. You've got to really break through just this one. It's like one perspective approach to human beings. Human beings are not systems and compartmentalized like robots. We are dynamic, organic, natured beings that come from an emotional, mental, spiritual, energetic, physical mindset. That we're overworking our heads too much. We're too much in like, get your mind right, brain health. Right. And we're not focused on any other part of who we are. And then we're wondering why we have so many mental health problems nowadays. Mm-hmm. It's just, I think we're overworking it too. And that's what's causing more mental health stress, not just dysfunction or disability.
I love it. I think I like the concept. I know that it works. I know that if, look, everybody can, it can help to have a coach. It can help to have a trainer. Sure. It can help to have a teacher, especially one that is you know, educated, especially one that has the skill set. And then somebody that's with you immersed, in real time, seeing those little shifts throughout the day. I mean, oh God, man, it's an interesting service. You're like the idol maker. Remember that movie from the 80s? Remember that?
Oh, I do remember that. That sounds familiar. It's, you know, what's sad to Michael? I think you get this. And again, I want you to hear what else you have to say, because I was curious about what your thoughts were.
Yeah.
Is unfortunately too, we get coaches. Like I met a couple coaches along the way, and I did. I got some formal education, just kind of go experience it, going to the coaching schools, got to get the certifications. Cause I was like, I'm going to see how these people do it. As I was already running my business. And it's interesting is they want to be paid for the effort. And it's interesting how I look at that. People are like, I want to be paid for my effort, my time. I don't get paid for my effort and time. I get paid for the results I get people. And there's a lot of, I know it's very hard to hear that. And some people are like, well, I got to make a living. I understand that. You're not going to be like me. But at the same time, when you get very rigid with like, well, at least I tried. So I should still like, it should still keep all the money. And you've basically, your clients are like, yeah, but you didn't do anything for me. I don't have anything. Like nothing happened. Well, that's what happens. Maybe you should pay me more money. And it's like, reevaluate what kind of coach you hire. Find someone who is flexible and has an ability to go, look, of course, honor the people. People, time is an invaluable thing. Okay, I get it. But when I hear people say, what about my time? Well, what about my time? My time is valuable too. So is yours. So why don't we change the business landscape and go to the table with your time's valuable, my time's valuable. Okay, I understand that when you give me an hour, your capacity is going to be different than when I give you an hour. Okay, great. Then how do we find common ground where if you are going to become my coach, here are my goals. Here's what I really want for my life. Do you have the ability to see past them and go, you know what? In order to achieve these goals, we have to do X first. Here's what I'm going to need from you. Here's what we're going to do together. Do you agree? And have a balanced conversation where if I don't achieve that goal for you, I'm more than happy to keep going until we get that goal because you did make an investment in having me. You trusted me. If we can change the coaching industry and landscape to start acting that way with people, more people can change their lives. More people can step into a new capacity. So anyway, that's just kind of like my thought on that.
I'm a capitalist, So I said, look, it's a smorgasbord. If that's what you want, then there's this model. There's that model. There's any model you want to choose from. This is an interesting model to me because I don't know a lot of people that do it. I don't think I know. I mean, I really never met anybody that does like a 24, like says, like lives, and I know that's valuable as long as somebody, has a good methodology or somebody, that's actually, not, just a whack job, which I know with your background isn't, but I know that, if somebody wants real change and I've seen it happen, then immersion, that's why let's say what's the difference between getting, reading a book and then going to a seminar? Well, seminar is a bit better than a book. What's better than a seminar? Well, having a coach. What's happening, that you talk to once, having somebody that's going to, that's getting results, it's coaching you on, any coach of any kind, I've talked to tennis players, sure. And all, but immersion, where you lifestyle coach, or whatever you want to call it, trainer, that has
it's intimacy. You got to bring intimacy to the table.
Well, them getting relaxed, letting the guard down, showing the true them. And then seeing their patterns. I'm an NLP guy. I really think there's some factors in NLP, neurolinguistic programming, and then seeing their patterns and then interrupting those patterns and creating the enforcing pattern that they want in real time is like massively valuable, especially for a guy that's a high performer. And it's like, what's that? To have somebody, sit there and like, well, if that guy was as good as me, then he'd be where I've not necessarily. This guy has done.
That's a good point. I heard Mark Cuban say one time where he goes, why would I hire? He hates coaches. He goes, why would I hire a coach? Why might I hire somebody who's never been able to make $1 billion like me? It's a little asymmetrical in thinking, because here's the thing. I don't have to have $1 billion to know where you're still stuck and limited.
Right.
It's like you need to evaluate and be able to intuit like trust and connection. If you feel like, oh, wow, something's different here with this person, I need to lean into that and kind of explore, what do they know? Maybe that I still don't know. When you have someone who's at the top who goes, well, I know it all now. And it's like, they've stopped allowing themselves to realize that maybe you actually don't know what you think you do. There are coaches and consultants and people out there that have an ability to go, no, there's some other crap here that you think you're doing, but you're not really doing it the best way possible. Let me show you how. Why shut them down? Simply because they're a seven-figure-naire. You know, they have like a $5 million company. Who cares? And they're a small coach, but man, they're working with powerful people and they're going, look, let me streamline you so you can be a better billionaire. Like maybe I don't have to teach you how to make $1 billion. You know how to do that already, but let me show you what it's like to be an optimal human being so that you can make even more billions of dollars more effortlessly. Isn't that worth something to you? And it becomes like, it was a good point you just brought up. And it's people's ability to like connect and feel into others. They're stuck in the head and if they don't like the way something sounds, they immediately go, nope, not for me. They just push it away. It's got to sound good. It's got to feel good.
And that's the interesting crux of what you do, because you're sitting there waiting for moments of adjustment for, you know, with somebody, and when you discomfort, you know, is going to create them to either, you know, accept it, which is the problem is a lot of times they don't, and to avoid cognitive dissonance in their situation, and then there's no growth. But if somebody is really eager to like really grow, they're like, I'm going to open myself up like a vessel. I'm going to take that pain. I'm going to try to change that pattern to make sure that I could, you know, and that's where the growth comes.
What do you think they do to us in the military?
You're fine. Yeah, that's what they do, right?
I mean, it's one of the things is why, what do you think happens to us when we go from civilian to soldiers, Navy SEAL, Ranger, whatever it is? It's because they take total control away from us. They put us in very vulnerable positions every single day for months on end. They stress us out. They break us down. They sleep deprive us. They keep food from us. They put us in a state where we are literally building muscle memory. They are doing things where we are in so much vulnerable lack of control outside of who we are that we discover deep down who we really are and capable of accomplishing under immense pressure and chaos. So that when the training starts and then we get built back up, as we come out and go to our teams and our units, we are functioning like a well-oiled operating machine. And then people go, why are they so elite? What do you think? Why do you think these people are the best? It's because they got stripped down. They're willing to be vulnerable. We're willing to embrace the suck. We're willing to step towards the uncomfortable. That's why you think we run towards gunfire. Why do you think we jump on hand grenades? Why do you think we go out and do that without thinking? It's because we are built and we're transformed in who the best version of ourselves is. So we actually perform at the top of our game. Why not take those very same principles and philosophies? If you want to be a high performer in your life, you want to make the most amount of money and experience satisfaction with the successes you have. You want a great relationships, better health, better thinking, more focus and clarity with what you're doing out in the world. What does it take to achieve that? And it's not going to happen like going to a seminar, reading a book. It's going to start the process, but getting to the place where you are in that position, that is the only way you're going to transform the way I'm talking about. That's why as an eruptor and who I am, my essence brings forth truth. And then I confront that truth and I fight people head on in real time, stripping them down, because that's what unleashes power and potential. And that's what keeps people sustainably at the top of their game. Full stop.
That was a nice encapsulation. As we come to a close, I always like to ask this question. What's on the, I would assume that you plan like this. I have to ask everybody, what's on your 5 to 10, 15 year plan? Do you plan that far ahead?
Yeah, a little bit. How do I say it? It's like 5, 10 years. I've been talking to my partner about it, my wife about it. And it's like, what do I really, because my work is intense. I've been doing it for 14 years. My life is, I have to take breaks when I'm done because I'm integrated. Like my life is their life. There is no separation of it. So I feel their pain. I feel their stress. I cry with them. I battle through them. It's like, so how long can I go giving this kind of energy and this attention? I think another 10 years easily. When I die, I'm special. When I die, it's gone. Like there's no teaching this to other people. I can't teach what I know and who I am and what I do and the eruption that happens with people. I can't do seminars. I can't do retreats. That someone asked me, I should do it. I can't do it because I can't finish my work at a retreat. My work is so, I can't do it on a 4-day thing.
I get it.
But what I would say is, like, my biggest thing is I've had people asking me that, how do we get you into politics? How do we get you into these people that are in these positions that are really making huge dents in who we are as a people? And I'm working those angles right now. I have a contact who's connected to like Tulsi Gabbard and all these different people, trying to figure out a way in which I can start integrating and infiltrating with my PR agency. I just got interviewed by Harvard Business Review. I have some other things going on. That's where we're looking to go, is I'm exposing my work to the public so that these leaders know I exist. So these celebrities know I exist, because they don't realize that they need what it is I offer. They have nothing that's challenging them the right way. And if they know I'm here, then we can have a conversation. We can explore what this looks like. And then I can start making a bigger impact, even more so out here, despite these networks that I've been operating. So that's what we're looking to do over the next 10 years at least.
And what an interesting data set, because a light bulb for me, just that, you know, because I'm thinking, well, this is what you're offering them, but you're learning. I call this podcast Invasions of the Body Snatchers. You have gotten to be an invasion of a body snatcher to the nth degree by living with high performing people and seeing their successes and their flaws. And then you're learning almost as much as they are because of what you're doing with them.
Well, I see the truth. I can't teach that. I can't explain it from people say that sounds very esoteric. I'm like, okay, why not all of it? I come from both the science and the spiritual and the psychology, et cetera. I have a very balanced aspect to it, but I can't explain to people my gift that I came into this world with, that I had to hone over the years through my life experiences. It really helped me discover we're all built differently. We have different parts of who we are. So what I see is it's understanding that I can see it through social media. I can see it through TV. I like that person. I know exactly what's going on and exactly where to optimize them and how it's going to look, but they just don't know I exist. And they don't realize that this is something they need, because they're surrounded by people that keep them like completely contained from that truth. So how do I infiltrate that? Well, I'm out in the world talking to people like you, having conversations with, my PRs. People are looking to hopefully get me on Joe Rogan. We're looking at, so all these bigger shows where I can go out and have conversations and share with people, hey, look, this is what it takes. This is what's really going on in the world. People are letting their dysfunction filter through. And now the dysfunction is having conversations on social media. And the only way that stops is to literally battle those demons and get those leaders who are the biggest culprits to it, for them to stop the dysfunction. Once they stop that dysfunction, the rest of the population will follow suit. It's just what happens when our leaders are doing it, our people are going to do it. Reverse course changes the landscape. So yeah, I like that. The body snatchers is a good point. I'm understanding more about their...
That was more of a global 30,000 foot view. But mine was, you get to see the weeds. You get to go inside these people. And it's like, ooh,
excuse me.
That little nuance, although it's not a big breaststroke, watching what certain people do that are also successful, what they do, you spending that time with them, it's like the amount of knowledge that you're getting. I mean, that's probably unconscious competence. You're doing things throughout your day that you learn from these people that you worked with that you might not even be aware of. It's ineffable. You know, it's like the amount of skill set that you probably have attained. It's through God knows what. You probably know how to make a great ribeye steak. You know, who knows what that they showed you. I'm talking about like everything from the mundane to like the sophisticated, it's fascinating.
I get what you're saying. Yeah. There's cool little techniques. I'm like, wow, I didn't realize you could do stuff with that. That's pretty cool.
Right.
Because when they have their, private chef over or whatever's going on, I'm like, what's going on here? Like, well, we're making this certain type of thing, or I'm doing this certain thing. I'm like, that's pretty sweet.
It's limitless spending that much time with somebody.
That's the thing, is when you get very connected and intimate with people, that's what you start discovering. But again, we're so superficial out in our world. We're not allowing intimacy to the degree that we needed to, so we can evolve and transform. I mean, that's the key. People are afraid to be vulnerable. They talk about it, but real vulnerability is a completely different beast altogether.
Yeah. And that's where the growth comes, right? When you really break that down, where they open
only
up,
happens,
you know,
when you're
scared. Jesus take the wheel or whatever you want to say. It's like, hey man, I can't push this. I can't hide anymore. I just want to grow. I just want to, be able to make this happen. And you can't, there's no pretense at that point. You really, like you said, it's broken down in a healthy manner.
I came out of the shadows. I didn't want to do social media. I didn't want to build a website. It was very uncomfortable doing all that, trying to distill this down into this one-dimensional space. I started a new podcast. I'm like, okay, this is new. This is challenging. There's so many variables. I realize when I feel it in my body viscerally, I'm like, oh my God, this is very uncomfortable. I go, great. You know, like, let's step towards that. Let me sit with that energy and channel that and utilize it. I had an Olympic gold medalist that I worked with, a hammer thrower guy. And he was like, hey, I had my coaches who would teach me that the butterflies I feel in my stomach, when I meditate on them, I would see them flying in formation. And when I feel that energy of them flying in formation, I would channel that energy into throwing my hammer, and you throw the hammer 20 feet further. So becomes this interesting way where you can embrace the discomfort and the fear and go, you know what, how can I use this as an asset for my power? How can I use it for my feel that drives my decision-making and my efforts? When you change the way you perceive your own fear and discomfort, it actually becomes a power source for your potential rather than a hindrance for more failure.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
We've gone over, but let's please tell everybody how they could find out more about you. I'm fascinated by this whole thing. This is great.
Yeah, we started Wise Words and Whiskey with Wiley McGraw is the new podcast that's kind of having cool guests like you on the show, where we're sipping really cool quality whiskeys that I'm taking through experiences and talking to all things high performance. The premise is low-key conversations on high performance living. That's kind of live right now, YouTube, Apple, Spotify. So that's a place people can jump into the conversation here, these different insights that I distill down with my guests about the work I've done, what they do, et cetera. WileyMcGraw.com is my website where they can kind of read a little more about my philosophies and insights on high performance and how to achieve and attain peace and satisfaction with your success. So those are the places people can follow. Twitter at Wiley McGraw. And LinkedIn, of course, is another place we've built out to make connections.
Hey, that's a good time, man. Sitting down with Wiley McGraw and having some whiskey and talking about, you know, experiences. That sounds like fun. Hey,
yeah,
thank
brother.
You. Thank you so much for sharing it. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
That was former star athlete, competitive bull rider, three-time combat veteran, and performance master, Wiley McGraw. Here's a nice little quote for Wiley. What the SEAL teams do, what our training does, is it chips away the outer layer and shows you what you're capable of and what you're not capable of. Marcus Luttrell, thank you for joining us, and I look forward to hanging out with you all on the next episode. All right, have you guys been to longshotleaders.com? That's where you can check out all of the guests and the bios and the backgrounds and more. Also, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what we do, give us a good rating. Tell your family and friends to come by and listen. It's going to make you feel nice and toasty inside. Every week we'll be delivering knowledge, creativity, inspiration, exasperation, perspiration. If it ends with a shun, basically you're going to find it here. All right, thank you for joining us. And in the great words of Bill Murray in the movie Caddyshack, friends for life, I say.